Thanks for listening to the Roman Circus Podcast, a podcast that has really mastered the art of a few weeks on and undeterminable amount of time off. I'm Matt Baker, and with me is a man who is unionly, legally able to record this podcast again as of 12:01 a.m., Zach Mabry. Zach, how are you, my friend?
I am pretty good, though I do think your facts may be a little bit mixed up. Only the writer strike, the WGA strike, has ended, and so I'm not in that union.
I don't care about unions. If it were up to me, I would bust them all. A one-man union-busting crew.
Yikes. Problematic, fam. Problematic.
Yeah. If you ever try and unionize on this podcast, I'm going to fire you so fast. I always like when people tweet things like that, like Ben Domenech. Did you see he tweeted that? He's the...
Yeah.
I forget what he runs, but he's just like, if my people try and unionize, he's basically, I'm going to kill them.
Yeah, which is funny because that's, as best I understand it, that's against the law to do. Like, it's literally entirely pointless to say, but then there are rules about this, and you can't retaliate. Like, it's odd because he wasn't even retaliating. He was like pre-taliating. Right.
That's so good. I like pre-taliating.
But it's funny because obviously he's on the right, but like there are all of these sort of progressive left organizations that frequently have union violations or different problems. A lot of the corporate media.
Current Affairs try and unionize and Nathan Robinson was just like, I don't know about this.
That was like a weird situation because it was like his magazine that he funded and he paid everybody equal, including himself. And mm-hmm. like everything happened. There's probably aspects of it, but it felt like with that it was basically you've got the kid that's sort of a nerd that invites everybody to his house because he has the newest PlayStation.
Right.
And everyone decides they want to keep playing it at his house, but without him. It's like,
yeah.
That's so that one was weird. But most recently, actually, the ACLU was ruled against by the body that does this, like the National Labor Relations Board, for one of their firings. And,
really?
It's funny when it's like nonprofits that are explicitly dedicated to political causes, but then there's also obviously, 10 years ago or less, people would associate Starbucks with being a liberal, progressive company, whatever. And they fought unionization pretty hard. And mm-hmm. So have different media outlets. I think the New York Times, basically that, again, people at least think of them as being on the progressive side. Obviously the ACLU will occasionally do it. I think it's sort of I don't know how authentic it is, but they'll stand up for people on the right that get hit with free speech stuff, kind of. But yeah, like, people that you associate with progressive causes or organizations, they tend to have these, horrible labor practices and get in trouble for violating the rules and pay fines and all kinds of stuff. So
it's all fun and games until it comes knocking at your door.
Yeah. So I don't know the details of the agreement that was reached between the AMPTP and the writers, mm-hmm. but people that I've seen reacting to it, who I sort of trust their views, all seem to say it's very positive. And, with the writer, the strikes that are currently happening, it's all very interesting because with, mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about the SAG strike previously, but with the actors and the writers, there's definitely the issues of pay. The actors are particularly interested in health insurance, things like that. But then there's this other side of it that has to do with AI and basically mm-hmm. saying, we don't want to be replaced by AI, or we don't think that you should be able to pay us for one day of work and use our likeness forever, since obviously the technology exists.
Right.
I looked into it because there's apps where you can have a podcast generated by AI. So you like charge it up by it. I think it has you read a few statements, And then it can take your voice and do a whole podcast, either using a transcript that you give it, or you can even use AI to generate the transcript and you just give it some notes.
If our podcasts ever become incredibly boring
or actually come out weekly, then you'll know.
It's AI.
Yes. But so, and that's actually, I think, a broader issue that impacts all of us. I mean, AI can be helpful for certain tasks. Like I've seen where people use it on their inbox and they say, can you summarize all the emails from my school or something? And, you know, like AI is great in terms of sifting through data and, you know, making certain things more effective, but it's not actually creative. It's not, you know, other than the entertainment value from an AI produced content is just the novelty of seeing what the AI comes up with. It's not art. It's not, you know, interesting. And
there was a thread on Twitter where a guy said, look at all these cool movie trailers made with AI. And he listed like 8 of them and they were the dullest.
They were terrible. I remember that.
It was just void of like any life or just personality. And if that's what it is, it's so bleak. And maybe we deserve to have our creativity nuked from us, but it was just so dull.
It's funny because there's different approaches to AI. Like I know people that use it to write emails and messages, and they basically say, okay, give me, you know, an email telling
potential client
about this. Then they read it back and they update it. You know, they just see it as this huge time saver and just this ability to take, you know, computing and take it a lot further, you know, but at a baseline, it's like, you know, entering a calculation, you know, 4 + 4 = 8, you know, but taking that and just layering it and making it more complex, that's great. Like, that's fine. But then on the flip side are people that they see it as like rival intelligence to humanity. And part of that is they're probably not particularly smart.
Did you say that? Did we make the same joke at the same time?
I think so. I think we did.
Incredible.
I know. After 5 years, it probably happens. but so, and on those, AI is like a dumb person's idea of a smart person. Like it's just a bunch of nested, you know, if then type statements and, you know, some tricks and stuff. And so I think pushing back on having AI take over the film industry, I mean, it's comparable to those impossible burgers made with like laboratory chemicals that are, you know, toxic. It's taking something and, you know, replacing it with a cheap technical alternative, which is more profitable, and then trying to pass it off as something good. And so it's good that we're seeing that in entertainment. I mean, I think that we'll have better movies and shows because the writers and actors are pushing back on AI and just getting junk. So, you know, I'm pretty pleased, and I hope that there's the actors, I think, have negotiations coming up this week or next week maybe. And so I'm hoping that one is resolved and we'll go, you know, with the actors, especially what I was confused about was the numbers didn't really make sense. Like, you know, respected analysts like Moody's and places had, done the numbers, and the extra costs for what they're asking for really was just a blip in the radar. It was like $600 million a year. The entertainment industry is multi-billion dollars. It's not, you know, it's just a blip. They'll still be very profitable. You know, the actors on the curb are wanting to make the studios extremely rich. And the studios have just kind of been holding out, but ultimately they're going to still continue, you know, they're not putting them out of business. But on the flip side was the streaming aspect. I think we talked about this on the pod, but basically, you know, my hypothesis was that the streaming companies have been lying about how many views they're getting.
Yeah, Netflix counts views if you watch for like 1 minute or something. That's why they always autoplay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what they basically didn't want to have to do is either pay residuals on fake views or have to turn around and say, actually 10 million people didn't watch the show. And so
they're in a bad spot because when they say like 4,000 billion people watch Bird Box, and if they have to show that like 100,000 people actually watch the whole movie.
Exactly.
And then, but if they don't want to say that, then they, yeah, potentially have to pay Sandra Bullock, who we love. Blindside wasn't her fault. They would have to pay her. What's up?
Did nothing wrong.
Exactly. They would have to pay her residuals on 10 billion views.
Right. And the writer's agreement agrees to success-based residuals. Basically, if a show gets a ton of streams, the writer residuals will reflect that. And so if that was the barrier, that's at least been partially overcome because they're doing it for the writers. So I assume they will be offering the same thing to the actors. And so it may have just been that they held the strike out of spite. Like they just were like, well, you know, 6 months of not working is going to sting. And we just want to make our point by doing that. You know, I don't really understand their motivation because the strike has been pretty costly. There's obviously no work being done.
Yeah.
And then, you know, projects like Dune and stuff have been delayed. And obviously the longer it sits, I mean, the way any kind of investment works, you know, that's longer until they get any kind of payback on that project. So
right.
Whatever financing they have, it's incurring interest. You know, investors are going to be getting their payback later. So it's, you know, the kind of valuation models are going to have it be worth less. In general, it's been costly to them, but, you know, it sounds like it's coming to an end. The other big strike that I think is interesting in terms of the implications for, you know, more than just those workers and people buying that product is the UAW strikes mm-hmm. for the auto workers.
Yeah.
The money thing, you know, that's there, that's fine. But the more interesting thing to me is that they're demanding a 4-day work week.
Right.
And the importance of that is, you know, everybody was told, at least starting in the 80s, that technology was going to change the world and we were all going to be working less and have the same standard or even better standard of living. Mm-hmm. And machines and computers were going to take on, you know, the grunt work and we were all going to benefit. Well, that didn't happen. People are still working. They're working more. It's just, you know, basically more output is being expected. Mm-hmm. But since it's fewer people and less cost, the benefits of that are mostly for investors. And I mean, most everyone is an investor now because of things like 401ks and retirement. So, I mean, that isn't saying that those workers aren't benefiting from that to the extent that they have profit share, 401k, mm-hmm. you know, just their own portfolios. But ultimately, it hasn't benefited people in the labor context that there's been these technological improvements.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And so demanding a 4-day work week is basically saying, okay, there's automation, there's technology, less work is required. And so there should be a shorter work week. Mm-hmm. You know, if rather than eliminating 20% of the workforce,
right,
why don't you eliminate 20% of the hours and have, you know, the same workforce? And it basically shifts, it helps balance the sort of benefits of automation for the workers. And I think if that were to catch on in the auto industry, it would, you know, potentially trickle down to other industries as well. And there would be the shift that says, okay, look, if technology is reducing the workload, then that should be less work for the workers, not less workers, not more hours, that kind of stuff. It's sort of saying we all do need to benefit. And that's important if, you know, there's all these panics about automation and things putting everybody out of a job. Well, this would be one way to help that. If the work week is shorter, then you'll need more people to reach the same outcome if everything else is the same. And since, you know, automation is reducing the amount of work, then a way to balance that is to reduce the work week so that it's benefiting labor. And it should still benefit, it will still benefit the investors. So it's really not so much of an either or.
Yeah, that's I think that the worker, like the auto workers, should just ask for like everything. Just the ask, like why limit? Why? Because people are talking about how they want a 40% pay increase, and people are saying that's ridiculous. We like, why not ask for it? Like literally, like that's literally that's business. Like when people tell you to like ask for what you think you're worth, right? So for
right.
So these work like the auto workers can't do that, but then anyone else who wants a job can try and negotiate. And it like I don't have any business icons. Like I don't look up to anyone in business really, because that's just not a thing I care about.
Right.
I don't have any like loyalty to people who are in positions of power or like successful, like good. I mean, good on you. You're a CEO of a auto thing, but like, I do know that I've been a grunt a lot in my life. Not, you know, grunt sounds harsh, but my point is like, it's just, I don't know. Like I paid $10 at Taco Bell yesterday for like a drink and four rolled tacos. And all I know is that people say we can't raise wages because the price of stuff will go up. Well, the price of stuff is still going up. Like it's just going up, right? So
right.
It's, I don't know. Like people should just get more money. And I don't, it's really secondary to me, like the effects it has on stuff, because I think a lot of stuff is pointless. Like, I don't know. I mean, I get the idea that if Taco Bell is out of business, then the people who work at Taco Bell don't have jobs. But the same point is like, I don't know why these people can't say we want more money.
Yeah. And I mean, on the 40% thing, I want to see the math on that. Maybe it is 40% across the board, or maybe there's cases where the increase amounts to 40%. Cause I know they're talking about wanting to eliminate the sort of two-tiered system where there's like a lower mm-hmm. level that makes a lot less.
Well, and that's what they did with
somebody at the very bottom is getting 40%. Maybe it is 40% across the board. I don't know.
Was it UPS who just got new contract negotiations? Like their thing, everyone said that they were making whatever amount of money, but it had to do with like basically time served, and there was a lot of different things. So it wasn't just like overnight everyone started making $180,000.
Right.
And the thing that I think I know that people just want to be reasonable at the end of the day. So like the auto worker thing may sound crazy, and Sean Fain, who's in charge, like that's his job. He was literally voted in. So he's the guy who has to like be out there and do the craziness stuff, right? But like at the end of the day, these people want to work, and they just want to know that they're valued, and they have this thing isn't going to be over because the auto workers are going to just stand there until they get like $200,000 more than they're getting. Like it's, I don't know. It just.
Right. The labor for the cars, the stat I saw is basically for, you know, the big auto manufacturers, it's about 15% of their cost. And so even a 40% increase of that is really only a 6% increase of overall cost, you know, on that math. And so it ultimately, it's, you know, it's cyclical, but those same people making more are going to be able to buy more. So, you know, you can't sell a car to a machine or somebody who can't afford a car. And so, you know, a lot of it is just trying to reach an equilibrium point between having businesses that can operate profitably with reasonable prices, and then the people that, you know, generate the value, that do the work, that, you know, the work can't happen without them, that they're also afforded a dignified life and able to afford things. And, you know, it's tricky, because the alternative is to go overseas or to automate. I typically am in favor of automation, but there has to be a way to sort of share the benefits of that across the board. And it can't just be, okay, we're 40% more efficient because of automation, so fire 40% of the workers. Mm-hmm. On some level, you know, I mean, the 40-hour work week didn't fall out of the sky. It came from the labor movement. A lot of people kind of don't have an appreciation for this. When it's talked about that, like, the reason we have weekends is because of the labor movement, people are like, well, no, I mean, if you look all the way back to biblical times, there's the day of rest. But when the Industrial Revolution happened, all that stuff went out the window. Like, society wasn't, there wasn't a 5-day work week or a 6-day work week or whatever. People were working in factories all the time. And so, you know, the 40-hour work week was something that worked at the time, and it may be that it can be less. I mean, I think, don't we want a future where machines do it all and we're all just kind of sunning ourselves, like at some point, you know, I mean, not like immediately,
yeah,
but it's obviously, it's going to have to benefit, you know, workers, and there's got to be a way to make a living. And if your product requires human input, then it needs to be able to support a reasonable wage for that person. And you can use taxes and stuff to make it to where companies can't go overseas. Like you can make it so that whatever they think they're going to save by moving their factories, they have to pay in taxes so that from a cost side, it doesn't save them anything. And so that's what I think, you know, the state should look at. I know that the president joined them on the picket lines, which is symbolic, and that's great. But also, you know, he is in a position of, like, he needs to be more focused on making sure that if the unions get what they're asking for, that they can't turn around and close factories and move them overseas and save any money in the process.
I like that he went and he was wearing blue and they were all wearing red, but Biden couldn't obviously wear red.
Oh, is that like a... This is like red and blue, like the blue state.
That's what I took from it.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I didn't see that. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at a pyramid, the biggest section is the bottom. So it obviously makes all the sense for candidates to be, you know, reaching out to the workers. You know, there's only so many executives and owners, and that's only so many votes. You know, Republicans don't seem to realize there's only four Koch brothers. I think one died, so it's not even that. Like, you can't win an election on...
Wait, there's four Koch brothers?
I think so. I don't know. I'm David... not looking it up, but...
No, Charles and David. Wait. Yeah, there are, but I... Charles and David built the... There are four, but those are the main two. And David died 4 years ago.
Okay. I mean, you can't win an election by just getting their vote. So,
yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how it plays out. But I do think there's aspects of the strikes right now that do pose important questions for everybody who's not just somebody that's an actor or who likes movies and not just somebody buying a car or making a car, but questions about how does automation impact all of us? How does AI impact all of us? Things like that. And so I'm in favor of these, and I don't really, I mean, if the math on the fine, on the salaries that they're asking for is impossible, then that will get sorted. You know, I'm not super worried about that side of it. The 40% increase thing doesn't really interest me. One, like you said, it's a negotiation. So they have to start with, you know, a big offer and perhaps they settle for something else. But then also, again, if that makes it impossible to make cars, we're going to still need cars. So I kind of just trust that to work out. And you know, again, the state can play a role at making sure that the companies aren't able to save money by going overseas and things like that. So in general, it's looking pretty good, though. It's been funny seeing on Twitter and stuff, a lot of the online leftists, because America doesn't have a ton of unionized workforces, so they just don't understand the concept.
And no,
I know. No. And so they call everything a scab. Like, yeah. One of the more recent ones was Drew Barrymore, who has a talk show where she, you know, Drew's just like a positive person. Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel like a conversation with Drew would start with like that she just found the best candle and it has changed her life, and like you have to smell it. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, like
I like that. Yeah.
So she announced that her show was going to come back. I think they've already canceled that though.
Right. Same with Bill Maher.
Yeah. And the challenge there is that it's not actually scabbing. She would get sanctioned by the union if it were, but her show doesn't fall under the SAG strike, but it does or did fall under the writer's strike. And so, but they don't necessarily have to have writers. It's the same reason we can have the Today Show and that kind of stuff is like not everything on TV was covered by the strike, and
professional wrestling, for example,
there you go. And then not everything. So yeah, some things were just straight up, there weren't strikes when it came to the actor side of things. And then some things can go without writers, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a lot of your daytime talk type thing. They have writers, and so they'll, you know, to be different. But, you know, late night is sort of the one that's not really possible without writers, because those are more, you know, jokes, that kind of stuff. They're not just interviews.
Yeah, I mean, they're supposed to be jokes, but...
I know. It's so like, and part of it, it's not their fault. Like, you have late shows on Fox News now that are, like, crushing it in ratings, but it's so, like, depressing to go on, and it's just the same stuff. I'm like, I want to see a live band and the funny stuff. Like, I had the whole day to hear about what Trump's doing or whatever. Yeah. But so Drew was bringing her show back. It was not scabbing, and it's the thing of crossing the picket lines, but there's, again, that's a concept that it's not, you know, again, you don't, sometimes you have to cross a picket line. I mean, if your union isn't striking, like when you have multi-union workforces, like the airlines and stuff, if your union isn't striking, you've got to do it. And,
well, that's what they're doing with the auto workers one too, is like, some are striking, some are working.
Right. And you have to you can't just run everything off of vibes. Like, I get that it could be a show of support to just voluntarily not continue working if you can, mm-hmm. in order to make a statement in favor of the strikes, but there's other considerations. And so if SAG had a problem with it, if anyone had a problem with it, they have avenues for sanctioning Drew. So, I mean, I get that, you know, maybe didn't read the room, but, you know, she brought her show back, like, whatever. Now that the writer's strike is over and her show's not covered by the SAG strike, she's clear to just go. Mm-hmm. But I think people were too harsh on her about this. Like, I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but, you know, if they were going to replace her or something, I don't think that she has to make that sacrifice if it's not actually being asked by the union. Like, you kind of really need to defer. It's, you know, it's called organized labor. Mm-hmm. You need to sort of defer to the organizers on this stuff.
Is it just that people want to know that she's supporting them? Which, like, yeah. I'm not saying she isn't. I just think that, I mean, obviously a bunch of people don't actually know what they're talking about. And, but also there is just that element of, well, can you at least tell us you like us?
Yeah. And I mean, I think that she did. I mean, it's a bigger, it is actually, people won't like this maybe, but it is a bigger sacrifice to ask somebody to not work when they're not covered by an official strike. Because then whatever contracts or things that are still in force, any consequences taken out against them are just against them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not part of it's not, it wouldn't be a collective action for Drew to not do a show. So, you know,
No, that is a good point. That, like, you're asking someone to go above and beyond and they won't reap the benefit in that specific situation.
Right. And when the strike's over, it's not going to be, well, I had to because of the strike. It's going to be, I just did this on my own accord. So there's, you know, and I don't think you should ask people to eat those consequences. That's, again, that's more than what's being asked of you if you're following a strike that your union is conducting. It, you know, your actions will be covered and you'll be able to say, I was going with my union, I was doing what was required. And so they're not going to be held against you personally. But for anyone that's not covered, it is. And I don't think that that's something that you can, I mean, you can ask, but I don't think it's fair to hold that against somebody if they don't. Mm. So, and then she got other people in trouble. So when she posted about it and she was like, I know this isn't okay, or I'm going to own the decision to come back on air, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. In the likes of her Instagram post on this was Jen Aniston, friend of the pod, maybe, no?
One of our best friends.
One of the best friends. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, Rachel, yeah.
Very good.
But so she liked Drew's post and she got in a bunch of trouble. Her Instagram has been getting her in trouble lately. She liked another celebrity's post, and of course I'm forgetting who it was, that was anti-Semitic.
Could you read the post word for word, Zach?
I will.
Okay, read the exact post. Don't cut anything. Say it exactly as written.
Okay, it was Jamie Foxx.
Mm-hmm. I hope he's doing well.
He said, they killed this dude named Jesus.
Uh-huh.
What do you think they'll do to you?
Ooh, interesting.
Hashtag fake friends, hashtag fake love. I don't know the background of that. That's a fairly, I mean, I don't even think that's like a wink, wink anti-Semitic thing. Like, obviously that statement is very anti-Jew. Like, the, you know, if you wanted to point out the, like, factually, you know, he was, but the what do you think they would do to you part, and also acting like a Jewish person in 2023 is part of they that killed Jesus. That's a bit, I mean, right. Like, that isn't like making some sort of comment about money and politics or George Soros, and that gets coded as anti.
A Soros-backed actor killed Jesus. What do you think that Soros would do to you?
Basically. And so Jen liked that post. I think she's just like denied it. And but she was already getting in trouble on her Instagram. So her response, this really makes me sick. I did not like this post on purpose or by accident. And more importantly, I want to be clear to my friends and anyone hurt by this showing up in their feeds. I do not support any form of anti-Semitism, and I truly don't tolerate hate of any kind. Period. Spelled out.
So that's
on period.
I didn't like this post on purpose or on accident. The post liked me.
Yeah. So
that's,
and then she turned off comments on all of her Instagrams. So
yeah,
who knows?
Oh, she did. I mean, great. Good for her.
I always like when people do that. Britney Spears' sister has to have Instagram comments permanently turned off.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing Dancing with the Stars.
Dancing with the Knives. Who's doing Dancing with the Stars?
Jamie Lynn Spears.
Oh, Jamie Lynn. Got it.
Yeah. If you crop her hair out of pictures, she looks exactly like Ted Cruz. I'm serious. But do it. I've witnesses that I've like expressed this to, and they've done it. Especially, she did that podcast, Call Me Daddy. Is that what it's called?
I don't know.
It's like one of those famous like Barstool adjacent podcasts.
Yeah. Oh,
And I was like, that was when it hit me. I was like, that's so weird. Anyway, so yeah, Jen got in trouble for that, and then liking the Drew post. So her Instagram usage has been a source of stress for her. And she's also kind of become problematic because she did an interview in the Wall Street Journal where she called out cancel culture, and she's like, I'm probably canceled for even saying this, but she doesn't like it. And she's not a fan. And I'm not sure what prompted it. There's obviously conversations about how problematic it is that Friends, all six of the Friends are white. But I mean, there's still, I mean, yes, but like Joey's Italian, the Gellers are Jewish, you know, I mean, it's not like, you know, there's not like WASPs the whole show, you know, and it's not like, it's not true to life that there's groups of friends of six people that are all, you know, white. But you know, that show, people try to cancel it. And I think most reasonable people are like, it's like a lot of people that, you know, support equity and the kind of look at that show and they're like, I mean, I think it's innocent enough, guys. Like,
Zach,
probably a bridge too far to act like the show is problematic.
Zach, would you say that you could never make friends today?
So Lisa Kudrow said that, and I'll just defer to her expertise as someone close to the matter. Like, she says there wouldn't be a show like that. She played Phoebe. She says there wouldn't be a show like Friends made today. So she's a subject matter expert on that show. So I'll just go with that.
I mean, that could be said for any sort of reasons, just like
part of it, New York, like it was already a stretch the way they live there, and they had to kind of have this whole rent control conversation. But I don't know that you've got a bunch of like middle class kind of bouncing through jobs, people that live these sort of glamorous lives. I could be wrong, but I feel like everyone there is either kind of broke and makes it work, or super rich, you know, reality doesn't apply to them.
Mm-hmm. And rent control is really just a conversation parents should be having with their kids. It's not
so true.
Not something that the media should be telling the children.
Yeah. I definitely don't want teachers introducing this to students.
Don't, when you go home, don't tell your parents I taught you about rent control.
Pulling your kids out of school because the teacher's talking about rent control. So, but you know, I don't know. I like Jen. I think she's a good actress. Have you watched The Morning Show?
No, I haven't. I've seen it around. Is it something that I should do?
I like it. It maybe falls under the so bad it's good category with the way that the second season was sort of unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely reads, it's very woke coded to an extent. Obviously, the first season is, well, I say obviously, people may not know. The first season is sort of entirely around Me Too. So the show is actually loosely based on, or I guess inspired by maybe the term, because I don't think that it, that I think the, so it's based on a book by Brian Stelter. The
Stelter?
Stelter, is that what I'm saying, Ryan?
Really? The CNN guy?
Yeah, yeah. So he wrote a book about morning TV and how it's, you know, this cutthroat environment and all these things that have happened, which is sort of true if you look at, so the morning shows, obviously Good Morning America and the Today Show go back to like the 60s or maybe further.
Right.
You know, they've been around forever. Historically, the Today Show on NBC was the top rated, but I believe they've fallen relative to Good Morning America. It was always kind of the other one. And then CBS has always, like, they've had like multiple different attempts at morning shows that have different names. So there's always, I think, been a CBS morning show, but like, I think, right there, it gets sort of completely rebooted pretty regularly. So their current show doesn't go back, you know, more than a few years. Cause I remember when I was a kid, it was the early show, and then CBS had the early show, and then they had the late show. And then NBC had the Today Show and the Tonight Show. And I always thought that was kind of neat, the parallels there. But then CBS does not have, the early show was canceled. So anyway, kind of taking stories and things from the Brian Stelter book, they craft this show called The Morning Show on a network called UBA. And it opens with, you know, I'm gonna spoil the first two seasons, and we'll probably talk about the third season. So if you haven't watched them and you don't want them to be spoiled, you'll have to just exit the pod now.
Okay, I'll turn off the podcast.
There we go. But the first episode, everyone's waking up at 3 a.m. to find out that the lead anchor of the morning show, who's named Mitch Kessler, played by Steve Carell, has been fired for sexual misconduct. And it's very similar to the Matt Lauer story, where, you know, Matt Lauer was fired very abruptly from the Today Show for sexual misconduct. And, you know, the rest of everyone found out live. So Savannah Guthrie, his co-host, had to go on and announce it. And then she had Hoda Kotb sitting there next door. And now the hosts are Savannah and Hoda. So similar thing, Jen Aniston's character wakes up to the news that that her co-host has been fired, and she has to go tell America about it. And then the drama kind of centers around who else is implicated, who was making the complaints, who knew about it and turned a blind eye, who like explicitly enabled it. So everyone's kind of in a panic about, well, what does this mean for them? In reality, you have the situation with Matt Lauer, but if you go back a few years on the Today Show, you have Ann Curry.
Okay.
You know about Ann Curry?
Yeah.
So she was the anchor with Matt and then was demoted to being like a field reporter.
Right.
And it's interesting to watch if you find it on YouTube. She was the one that had to announce to America that she was no longer going to be an anchor. And she just like burst into tears and like, kind of a sad thing. And it's now sort of commonly accepted that Matt Lauer was the cause of that. Whenever she's asked about it, she's kind of does this sort of no comment thing, but is like implying that it's true. So I don't know if she just sees that as effective or if there's NDAs involved. But
okay, I'm gonna interject. I'm looking up Ann Curry, and in June of 2016, at the 84th annual U.S. Conference of Mayors in Indianapolis, Ann Curry moderated a panel discussion between the Dalai Lama and Lady Gaga.
That's so important. She did get the Dalai Lama to go in studio for today also.
Yeah.
And that's pretty rare.
I mean, good on her. I just thought that was a funny panel to moderate.
I think it's really, I think that probably generated a lot of really important conversations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So anyway, so aspects of it sort of parallel reality, and then otherwise it's very fictional, but I think they just pull in elements. I mean, probably kind of like Downton Abbey. Like there's that show creates a completely fictional family, but it pulls pieces from things that actually happened in terms of, you know, rich Americans marrying British nobility who need money. You know, they did shoot it in an actual manor house, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting show. I like shows where everyone's like plotting against each other, like Succession, The Morning Show, stuff like that. My life is very drama free, so I only really get that from TV. I plan to keep my life drama free.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
That'll always just be something that I get there from entertainment.
Right. But
it's pretty interesting. And so then as it goes, and again, I mean, I'm spoiling it, but as the show unfolds, you know, everyone's kind of backstabbing each other. Jen's character is very worried about what's going to happen, you know, when there's a new co-anchor. Am I going to lose my job if I don't mesh with them? So she really wants in her contract that she gets to approve her co-anchor. And when the network refuses to play ball with that, at a big event for journalists, she goes up on stage, and during her acceptance speech for this award, she announces Reese Witherspoon's character, who's this sort of random reporter from West Virginia, as her co-host. And since the whole rest of the media is there and it's all being, you know, filmed, the network is going to have to just go with it, basically. And so, that's there. But then Reese's character ends up really wanting to get to the bottom of who knew what was going on. And that becomes a big source of tension between her and Jen, because Jen kind of wants it all to go away once, you know, the Matt Lauer character has been fired.
Mm-hmm.
Because she, you know, sat next to him, and the implication is she sort of knew what he was doing with all these women and just kind of, you know, let it happen. If somebody complained that he assaulted them, they would get a promotion. You know, if he was hooking up with someone and then the affair breaks off, he'd move them from his team to her team or whatever. Like, you know, the whole company is sort of facilitating this guy's predatory behavior. And she's sort of aware of it, but just doesn't care because she's on top and, you know, not her problem type thing. And so it's a fairly interesting show, the first season, especially just with this sort of drama of like what happens here and the backstabbing and kind of the desperation and stuff that comes into play. It's also very like ripped out of the headlines. So, you know, they have the Me Too thing. They also cover the California wildfires and the Las Vegas shooting. And so it's very like, you know, current events heavy, which I don't usually like, but they make it fun. So they're kind of the exception. I really don't want other shows talking about Trump in their timeline or having COVID be part of their universe.
Yeah.
But I'll give this one a pass because it's fun. The second season was like, it took some of the things that were weird about the first season and really built on it. So the show has like 100 subplots, and a lot of them are not particularly interesting, and it's like feels like a distraction from the main events, and you're just sort of annoyed. Like Reese's character has all of this family drama, and she's trying to get her brother into rehab, and then he goes missing, but it's also COVID, and you're just like, I don't care about this. Like, I do not care about this plot line. and you know, things like that. But the second season is entirely COVID is the big thing. So it starts out and they're all kind of, they're hearing about it and
it is
they
a,
just don't care.
It is like a free pass at a storyline though. I mean, like it, we obviously don't really want to hear about it and we all want to forget it happened, but in defense of the show, yeah, it is content.
Yeah. And it's fun how it interacts with their universe. Cause it's, they're again, a morning show. So the, obviously all the morning shows started shooting from home and you kind of saw it, how everyone has really boring, awful taste in home decor. I'm hoping those were all like set up like that on purpose. So you couldn't somehow identify where they live or something.
Yeah.
But everyone has the same like white built-in cabinets.
As
with,
possible.
Like, yeah. The same like white built-in cabinets behind them with like crap from TJ Maxx and stuff. And so you're like, you guys make so much money. Like you should have.
My favorite Zoom interview on a thing is when you can just see their bed. They're just very obviously just in their room and they're not even trying to hide it.
Yeah, I support that. Go, mm-hmm. go them. No yeah. effort. So the second season, what they did that's weird, and while the show is very like woke coded, I think it actually is kind of interesting in how it explores some of these issues. So in the second season, they actually sort of rehumanize Steve Carell's character mm-hmm. and show his sort of life after cancellation. He's moved to Italy. And he'll, you know, be out getting gelato and somebody will record him for TikTok and go up and like yell at him for being, you know, a rapist or whatever. And, you know, they show his sort of sadness and like you end up kind of feeling for him. And that's interesting. Obviously, nobody's done that with Matt Lauer in real life.
Yeah, I was just looking up to see what the latest on Matt Lauer was, but
the most interesting reaction to Matt Lauer was Kathy Lee. So she, her reaction, you can find it on YouTube, but she's like, I'm just devastated for Matt. I texted him and said, this doesn't change anything. I still adore you and we need forgiveness. And I mean, she's not wrong. And I think maybe she didn't mention kind of how bad I think she did. I mean, so you kind of have to figure out how do you support justice and want, you know, lives to improve and you don't want people to be treated badly and sexually harassed and stuff, mm-hmm. but also like forgiveness is a cornerstone of our religion. And that's like an open debate about how you handle these things.
Sure.
It's like, you can't necessarily jump straight to forgiveness. There is a wrong that's happened and there has to be, retribution. Like there has to be a certain amount of, what is it? Restitution? What is the,
right. It's all
reparations. Like, you know, that's a whole concept in, at least in Catholicism, you know, prayers for reparation for the sins of mankind, not just your personal sins. You know, the five Saturdays devotion is premised on reparation for blasphemies against the Blessed Mother. Mm-hmm. You know, I assume it's not just there for people who have themselves blasphemed the Blessed Mother, but, that's a concept, at least in our religion.
We all could be doing reparation even for something we didn't do just out of respect and out of acknowledgement of the wrongness of the thing.
Yeah. Wanting to have good triumph over evil. So there is forgiveness, but you can't really skip over there being consequences for actions. Right. Mm-hmm. So Kathy Lee's reaction is interesting. I don't really remember her getting much blowback from it, but you know, that was an interesting thing. So,
yeah, I mean, Kathy Lee also is in the good position of everyone taking her seriously, but not in that way. Like she's more or less been a TV showman
and I think that she's sort of allowed to talk about the forgiveness thing. You know, her husband had an affair that was very public. Mm-hmm. She forgave him and they stayed married till he died.
Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. I mean, that's also funny. People criticize Hillary for not leaving Bill. And I thought that was one of her more admirable decisions.
Yeah.
People can say that the motives were impure and that she did it out of political expediency, but I also think, I think on some level that they probably do have a, I don't know, like, especially in old age, I'm sure they have a, I hope they're happy. Like, I don't wish any ill will on, on them. The 90s were great, so I don't have any beef with Bill Clinton. but so the show, it's interesting. They have a token Republican. It's this Cuban guy that's the weatherman. And, you know, he complains about the, they're like, why can't we cover this COVID thing from China? And he's like, well, maybe if we didn't spend all the time on these sham impeachments, we'd have more airspace. And everyone's like, what? You don't think? He's like, it's a sham. So they have like their problematic characters. And, you know, at the end of the day, you also end up sympathizing with him. So the show isn't as heavy-handed as it seems. And there's definitely, you know, Black characters who don't really care about racism directed at other Black members of their staff. There's, you know, women who aren't sympathetic to the Me Too victims and accusers. There's men who are. The show isn't exactly, you know, color by number. So, I mean, and again, it's, in a sense, it's sort of cheap media, but at the same time, it actually does provoke interesting conversations, because you are, by a few episodes into the second season, you end up being very sympathetic for the Mitch, Matt Lauer, you know, predator character, in terms of like, he was sort of playing by what the rules were.
Yeah.
And he's realizing along with everyone else how bad it was. And then everyone who enabled it and knew about it and signaled to him that it was fine is distancing themselves from him. And, you know, there's no like redemption arc. And you kind of wonder about like, what do all these people do after that? So that makes, to me, the show very interesting. It also has Greta Lee as a character, and I really like Greta Lee. I wasn't familiar with her when she first joined, and I was like, this character is very annoying. She's Korean. She plays a character who becomes an executive at the network after her company gets bought by the network, and, you know, starts out very like, well, we're not going to have two white anchors again, or, you know, there's supposed to be a change on these things, like diversity, that kind of stuff. And then you actually see her start to make compromises and start to be like, well, we need to be profitable. So she starts to kind of go against her own values, and she's sort of explicitly in a position of power and has agency and stuff, but ends up making other choices when it's beneficial, and kind of grappling with that. And so what's that?
Many such cases.
Yeah, exactly. So that like makes it all very, very interesting to me. The new season, very ripped out of the headlines. The network is looking at being bought by a tech investor who also owns a company that does rocket ships. And so basically is Elon Musk, played by Mad Men, played by Jon Hamm himself from Mad Men. And he's kind of, you know, going to buy up the network, and, you know, everyone's freaking out about that. They have a big hack and a data breach, which is, I was kind of surprised about, because the other thing about the morning show and why they'll keep making it, even if it gets bad reviews, is that it's sort of the show that launched Apple TV Plus. It's like their, that was their first big show they put out. It was the one that got Emmy nominations, and Jennifer Aniston won a SAG award, and they have to keep making it for the foreseeable future, because it is like the, you know, tentpole of their streaming service. And so for them to have everyone in the show carries Apple devices at all times. So it was their Apple devices that got hacked. And I was like, I wonder if Apple had any beef with this storyline or how they let that get through.
They, it's just art imitating life.
It really is.
That's all we want from our, that's all we want from our televisions. Where would you put it in, like, it's like a comedy, but it's also drama. Like, what do you say is the more element? Is it more a drama or more a comedy?
It's probably more drama.
These are the hard-hitting questions I'm asking.
Right. It falls in between. There's definitely funny moments. Now I'm forgetting her name. Mindy Kaling is in it, and her character is, you know, the anchor from a rival network, and she's very petty, and her scenes are funny. And you know, Steve Carell, when he's canceled and exiled to Italy, meets this sort of funny Italian woman who wants to be a filmmaker. And she, you know, there's comic relief way more so than similar, you know, corporate backstabbing series like Succession, which Succession has funny parts, but it's mostly the way the dialogue's written. Like they're other than, I guess Greg is sort of there as kind of pure comic relief.
Yeah.
But this, you know, it's a bit more of a,
some would say Kendall is the comic relief, but
I mean, that show's great. I have to rewatch it.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It's sort of in between. I don't know if they call that a dark comedy or if that's another genre, but it's, you know, the drama is kind of the central aspect, and it, the show is very sporadic with plot lines, and they go too far down tangents that nobody could possibly care about. And, you know, weirdly, again, spoiler alert, they just like, without any prep or any setup, made Reese Witherspoon's character a lesbian in the middle of the second season.
I mean, that's just like, that's just, you know, what, that's just TV these days.
Yeah. It was just bizarre that they didn't really, like the first season, the character is hooking up with men and isn't, like, they didn't, there weren't any, I would think, I'd be surprised if I'm wrong, but I don't think that they had that in mind throughout the entire first season. And so there just wasn't any groundwork for this person to just suddenly be a lesbian, but that's what happens. So spoiler given.
Was she, is this character in college?
Yeah. I mean, she's like, she's an adult, and that's the odd thing. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know that they were doing it for woke points or not. Like, it was just bizarre. They, after it happens, it starts to fit the storyline pretty well. And like, you know, she gets outed, and it was the network that leaked it to prevent another story from leaking. And, you know, I mean, it's like it works in, but it was just bizarre, the episode where it happened. Cause I was like, this was definitely, there was no groundwork for this character to be, you know, suddenly. And they even, I guess they kind of acknowledge it when she's like, I didn't even know why she basically just like lunges at another character and kisses her. And it seems to have also surprised.
Seems like that's what got Steve Carell's character in trouble.
Yeah. Right. And so it seems to surprise Bradley, Reese's character, as much as it surprises everyone else. But, you know, it's got good characters. I like it. We're midway through the third season. They've already said season four has been greenlit.
A lot of stuff has been getting canceled lately, so it's nice to know at least that has been picked up. What was the one? Where did you ever see Bombshell? Is that the one with Nicole Kidman that kind of takes place in the, it's like the Roger Ailes. Sorry, I had to clear my throat. The Roger Ailes.
Is that the movie with all the prosthetics?
It must be. I never saw it. So did you see it?
I did. I don't know why the title's not like ringing up, but it was the movie about behind the scenes at Fox News.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where does it compare to that?
Well, it's not nearly as real to life. Like that movie was pretty tightly sourced, I think. And so it was trying to really specifically tell the story of Fox News, but you definitely see some similar concepts, like characters who have had, they've been, you know, harassed or assaulted, and they just don't care. And for them, it was transactional. Characters who've been assaulted, or there was somebody attempted to, and they're very upset by it. Characters who weren't involved, but they feel one way or another, and then kind of competing loyalties. I think Bombshell has characters who were themselves assaulted, but they were defending Roger Ailes because ultimately that's where they decided their loyalties lie. And so, yeah, it's definitely similar in the chaos and stuff, but obviously in the morning show where, you know, Jen Aniston's character Alex seems loosely based on Savannah Guthrie, but isn't Savannah Guthrie, and her other storylines are not Savannah Guthrie storylines. And then the Mitch character, you know, is Matt Lauer, but isn't, as far as everything that happens besides that. The, you know, Bombshell, it's like explicitly Megyn Kelly is the character.
God.
And And so that part's interesting. You know, it's much more, I don't know, historical fiction or something. I don't know what you call it, but they Bombshell, while it's not, you know, factual, every bit of it, like Megyn Kelly's in it, Janis Dean, they're trying to tell what actually happened. They're not just kind of piecing together, you know, lots of storylines into sort of composite representatives. But that movie was interesting. The prosthetics were really off-putting to me, mm-hmm. but it won a lot of awards for it. I'm glad they didn't use as much like CGI and whatnot. But to the extent that the morning show is very ripped from the headlines, you know, Elon Musk, Matt Lauer, COVID, mm-hmm. Trump, that obviously is makes it similar to shows that are more just dramatized storytelling. And so, and that show's interesting too, because Megyn Kelly was, you know, prominent in that. And she left Fox News and went to NBC and was on TV in the morning for longer than I remembered. It was like a year that she was on air with them.
Yeah.
And she ends up getting, she got canceled by them, but she had to keep all of her money. So that was the crazy thing. She got so much money from NBC. And when they dumped her, they still had to pay out her contract. So did you see that she interviewed Trump?
Yeah, I did. That was, I mean, you know, everything comes full circle, right? That was like the big, that was one of the big original 2016, 2015 Trump things. And here we are right back at it.
It's interesting because like, why the reason I sort of respect Megyn Kelly is he definitely said mean things about her and kind of turned his fans against her. And she just doesn't seem to have ever cared. Like she wasn't out crying about it. She doesn't talk about all her death threats that she gets. And then now she's fine at interviewing him. She just doesn't seem to have been fazed by it.
I've like never had anything against Megyn Kelly. I just think she's just out there just kind of doing her thing. And like you said, I think she fully realizes like it's all just a stupid game. So she's just going to play it. Like if something happens with Trump, she'll use it to her advantage. And then if something else happens, she'll use it to her advantage. And if she says something about blackface and NBC wants to fire her, she's just like, okay. And then she just moves on to the next thing.
The craziest thing about that is, so that was, you know, supposed to have been the straw that broke the camel's back, is she basically said, well, not everybody that's done blackface was doing it to be racist.
Right.
Like they, you know, were just whatever.
Which well, is, you know, probably obviously true.
Even yeah. If, even I mean,
if
given.
Even if it's bad, they, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, 30 Rock had multiple blackface episodes. And
I mean, like every show did.
Well, and then one of the Jimmy Fallon is the host of NBC's Tonight Show, and videos of him in blackface.
I mean, resurfaced. Kimmel did it too. Like everyone.
Oh yeah, he was all about it.
Yeah.
But it was funny because so NBC has they're employing both Megyn Kelly and Jimmy Fallon, and Megyn just so Jimmy Fallon is caught doing blackface, and you know. He apologized, but the implied understanding was like, you know, we didn't have the same awareness of these things as being harmful. We thought we were just being funny. Like he wasn't and the reason that he's not fired and that he's still on the air is the understanding of he wasn't trying to be racist, but he recognizes now that doing blackface is racist and it's not something he would do now. Mm-hmm. But with what he knew then, he thought he was just being funny. That was all Megyn Kelly said. So like he literally did it and has to apologize,
her quote was, when I was a kid, that was okay as long as you were dressing up like a character, which is true. Like it's the most true. People just did that and they were dressing up as a character. And that doesn't mean that it's like good or correct in hindsight, but the logic of we did it because we were dressing up as a character. I mean, that's
well, and that was the logic of not firing Jimmy Fallon. So whether they wanted to say it blatantly or not, what they said by not firing him was that like it was okay in whatever year it was, 2004, with what we you know, with how we understood things then, and we now know it was never okay. But there weren't the intention. Basically, they said, you know, the intention is what mattered. So we apologized. But I mean, again, what she said was the basis of why they didn't fire people that had done blackface. And then they fired her for saying it, which is just, I mean, and I don't think people liked her on NBC. Her shows didn't get good ratings. They probably had other reasons, but that will always be funny to me because you don't even have to weigh in on the blackface thing to say the basis of not firing Jimmy Fallon was that we didn't understand this as being something racist when we did it in 2004. And all Megyn Kelly said was back then people didn't think of it as something racist. Like it's, it doesn't, like, you don't even have to agree or disagree with her to say that the logic applied to keeping Jimmy Fallon was articulated by Megyn Kelly and she fired, got fired over that. So, you know, that's kind of fun. I mean, she's interesting. I think her big issues now are like trans stuff and vaccines.
She,
so that's a little boring.
Same. So she, in June of 2023, I don't know why, but it, her Wikipedia page just says, Kelly explained why she changed her position on preferred pronouns from being for them to being against them.
Against them? Against they, them?
Ooh.
That's such an annoying topic, too. That's going away. Like, I do not believe that you're, the pronoun thing is going to be around forever. It's a weird HR trend. And by force, I mean, I don't even know if they force people to do it at companies, but if you do require everyone to disclose pronouns, even under your own logic, you're forcing a some number of people to either out themselves when they're not ready or to misgender themselves. So like, it doesn't really make sense from any angle. And you've already seen it start to evolve. Like it's not called preferred pronouns anymore. It's just called pronouns because it's not a preference. It's who you are. And I think everybody's kind of tired of that, like not even getting into the exotic frog self stuff.
Yeah.
I think everyone's like, yeah, this just is not, this isn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
The thing you used to have was Mr. or Ms. or Mrs. or whatever in your title on things. And so that sort of communicated to people, you know, what they were dealing with. And then with everything being first name now, I mean, cause if someone's emailing you, I don't know, it's like, what am I working with? They're not named like Mark or something.
I just call everyone fella. Just like, all right, fella.
Well, see, that's, isn't that gendered?
It doesn't matter. I'm just using it for everyone.
That's always funny too. Like people will say, you know, any, saying, hey guys, is obviously meant to be any group of people, including groups that are completely made up of women.
Yeah.
I actually, I pivoted to hey gang just to make sure people know that this is an inclusive environment.
Well,
I mean,
that's,
nobody wants to upset anyone, but some of the things it's like, I don't think that forcing everyone to disclose that stuff is going to stick around. So it's a weird issue to obsess over.
At my job, I'm in a little team with three other gals and I just say, hey gang, but then I find the other, the three gals always say, hey guys. So like, it's just a thing. It's just like a term, you know?
Yeah.
Of endearment.
The term of endearment.
What,
yeah, and it'd be different. Like people talk about in other languages that have a lot more of like a gender component, you would refer to a group of men as a mass, you know, in a masculine plural, in a group of women in a feminine plural, but in a group, a mixed group, it's going to be the masculine group. But that doesn't translate to English. Like you can say, hey guys, and be talking to five women. And this is where I think that people from every walk of life just get tired of things. And the way that sort of academics and HR professionals have teased this issue out, it just goes past anybody's, like anybody's sense of interest, like whether, wherever they stand on the issue, however it impacts them personally, trans, not trans, support, ally, you know, oppose. Like, I think that the interest in specifically the pronoun stuff will fade and people will kind of move on.
Yeah. Did you watch any of Megyn Kelly interviewing Putin?
No, that was, so she, that was, she did the two big interviews.
She did the, what, Putin, the best friends. Oh, yeah. That, I thought you were talking about Trump and Putin when they, she just wants to be out there just talking to people. Was, I think the interview she did with Putin was the one where he was just like, I don't know. Is that the one where he just said like he's sorry about the guy whose plane was exploded, whose plane Putin exploded or whatever?
I don't remember all the things. It I always wonder about Russia. Like, do they know that they influenced the 2016 election?
Yeah,
like, do they know that they planted Hunter Biden's laptop? Like, every time there's a headline that people bring up Russia, I'm always like, does Russia know how much of the American imagination they captured?
Yeah, because when the Canadians and Zelensky like gave a standing up ovation to that Nazi the other day.
Yes.
The Trudeau's apology was, I mean, the beginning was pretty solid. And then he was like, but we can't let this distract us from fighting Russian propaganda. And like, it's the same thing. Be like, does Russia even know, like, how aware is Russia that they gave an applause, like a standing ovation to a Nazi?
That storyline is just like, it's wild because you get, like, especially in European politics, like, you'll have people in countries that were subjugated by the Nazis and, like, you know, conquered by them. Mm-hmm. And then if somebody comes out as, like, vaguely right of center, like, whatever, they get called basically a Nazi. But then this guy was, like, an actual, literal mm-hmm. Nazi, like, fought for the Nazi. Like,
yeah, there are pictures
of him. Nazi as it gets, folks. But he's just, like, Nazi. He just has Nazi ties or, like, Nazi linked.
Yeah,
or,
they said he was Nazi linked.
Yeah, like you have Pope Benedict was in like the mandatory Boy Scouts of Nazi Germany, and so he's the Nazi Pope. But then this guy was like running the camps.
Yeah,
and you know, it's like, well, we have to understand blah blah blah. It's
the crazy, it's dumb. Yeah. The crazy thing to me about that is, besides the fact that no one thought to like look into who this guy was, there's just part of it that's just like, and maybe this is where I make that hard right turn and make money off of it. You know, I'll become like one of those guys, but the people just applaud for whatever they're told to applaud for. Like, it's not
standing ovations are just handed out. You get a standing ovation for everything.
Like, it's not even that chamber wide or whatever it's called should have known who that guy was. They were just told that that guy was a guy who was on Team Good Ukraine, and we just applaud for him, right? Like, it's just like a thing where it's just like you just applaud for the good guy.
And yeah, I mean, I assume they just presented him as a veteran. It's like, okay,
yeah, but even then, like, they're not going to applaud for whoever Zelensky applauds for.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a pretty decent chance, I would say, that Zelensky knows that guy was a Nazi. Like, but he's on Team Ukraine, right? So that's what Zelensky has to do, is make sure that people applaud for Team Ukraine.
Well, and that's where, like, the response was interesting, because instead of just being like, I mean, he was presented to us as a veteran. We didn't, you know, oops, we didn't know. What we were clapping for was the bravery of the Ukrainians and the people mm-hmm. fighting this war. That's what we were clapping for. And we didn't realize that this guy
had been Nazi. The Nazi was a stand-in for modern day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, okay, there's a lot of things like that. I mean, you support someone and they turn out to be bad, and it's like, well, that's not what I was supporting, obviously. But instead, there's been all these weird equivocations about, like, well, but they had to make a choice between Russia and Germany and blah, and it's like, don't equivocate on this. Like, just say party foul. Like, okay, didn't realize he was a Nazi. What I was clapping for was this, and I just didn't know that this person was that.
Just say whoops, LOL, and move on.
Yes, that's the best way to do it.
But LMAO, even.
Yeah. LMAO.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's a whole thing. Our government's going to shut down, but we're still going to give money to Ukraine. I love it all.
Well, it doesn't. A lot of the shutdowns are different than they used to be. In the past, there was a lot of disruptions of things that couldn't happen.
Zach, they have since then
more or less automated everything.
Don't give me the facts. I just want to be angry that our government's going to shut down and we're still going to give money to Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it mostly bothers me that we don't give money to people in need, and like, we don't have, we don't have health coverage for everybody. We don't have Medicare for all. We don't have things, and
Why
like,
isn't
the
anyone
idea of what?
gone with, they're too busy giving money to Ukraine and don't want to give money to you?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's going with that. I mean, I guess
Oh, sorry,
it's
I
like
don't
not an
pay
either or
attention.
to me. It's like there's just a lack of interest in helping Americans. They could probably afford both. I mean, they print the money. So it's like, because I get a little annoyed when we talk about immigration and we have to talk about homeless vets. And it's like, I mean, again, guys, this is just not like, there's
Everybody
not a
wants,
finite amount of money.
yeah, everybody wants their thing to be acknowledged, and you can't acknowledge that the other thing is good until you acknowledge their thing also.
Yeah, I think you can highlight the urgency of helping Ukraine relative to the lack of urgency in helping Americans who are suffering. It just sort of
Course.
gets like they're at the end of the day, though, they're separate issues. And it just feels kind of cheap, especially when there's people that don't have any sort of history of advocating for the government spending. A lot of them are against government spending, period. And so if you said, okay, we're not going to give Ukraine another dollar, but
Right.
we're going to increase spending for food stamps, or we're going to start having Medicare for 55 and older, or whatever. They are against that too. So that's where it gets kind of annoying, is it's like, I mean, to whatever extent AOC nominally supports Ukraine, she also nominally says she supports universal health care. And to whatever extent Rand
She
Paul is against funding Ukraine, he's also against giving money to Americans.
Yeah, Ocasio-Cortez had a great, she was asked about like her support of EVs. And
Oh yeah,
like,
that was pretty funny.
it was so good
Oh,
because she drives a Tesla and they were like,
problematic.
what's up?
Problematic.
Yeah, well, but then they asked why. And she said, because she has, like, that was the most efficient way. And like safest way to get around during COVID, I guess, because she didn't have to stop at gas stations. And then they were talking about the move to EVs on like, Fords and other of those. And she's like, yeah, we've definitely been discussing maybe turning in our Tesla for one of those things and the for one of those cars. And the interviewer said, well, is that something you're going to do? And she's like, yeah, it's been something we're discussing and we hope to maybe do it sometime soon. And it was
Right. And the controversy there being that Tesla has a non-unionized workforce. And so the UAW strike that we talked about earlier in the show is happening, and she doesn't drive a union-made car. And her reason, right, was that at the time they bought it, there was no vaccine. And so you couldn't, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it adds up, but yeah, that was a funny.
Well, it's just I like she can't just say I have this Tesla and I like this Tesla. Like it, which is
Or that
annoying.
I'm going to get rid of the Tesla. It's just like we're discussing, which is funny because so she has her like starter boyfriend, fiance person. And so I'm like, do they have like meetings on the calendar? Like, okay, like let's table the discussion on trading. It's like it's a car, it
Yeah.
takes 20 minutes to buy.
They yeah, I don't it's just annoying. I don't
She's
know.
funny. I feel like she's run out of content. This is what kind of struck me about her is that she had. When she first started out in 2018, she's on the national scene. She had these different sound bites and like gimmicks and stuff that kind of propelled her to being more of a celebrity than a politician. And I think that she had about 2 years of material and then she's out of material. So
Well, she
she's.
probably had less, but it the runtime was enough for 2 years.
Yeah. And so now she's just kind of like, she's out there, doing her thing, but there's not. If you notice, the headlines about her aren't really that she said or did something wild, and she votes to fund Israel and votes to fund, I mean, she's whatever she set out to be, she's just kind of a Clinton style, pragmatic
Boring.
Democrat. But I was like, I just think it was that. I think that she did it, had a number of other career ventures prior to the whole Congress thing. And I think she had some material and she's used it all and she's still very famous, but you don't really get much from her anymore.
Yeah, I feel like it was obviously the talk was that she could run for president, but I don't think that's, I mean, she may attempt to, but I don't know. It seems
I
like
I don't think she has any interest in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would she?
That would be, and I mean, I think she's realistic about her prospects for winning a national election. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, Nikki Haley runs, and who's voting for that? Mike Pence?
Yeah. Well,
Asa Hutchinson from Arkansas. I mean,
yeah, I mean, everyone,
the craziest people.
Anyone can run, Zach. I am not trying to say not everyone should run. I think anyone who wants to run for president can run for president. So if AOC wants to run, then, you know, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll just be how do elections change and like what is it like? I think running for president can, you know, kind of like Marianne. I mean, it can boost your.
Is she running, Zach?
I think always.
Oh, that was my joke is that they never say she like no one ever taught. No, they try to acknowledge that she or try not to acknowledge that she's running. Like her and RFK just know like they're just like don't look over here.
Right. And so, I mean, if AOC were to make the decision similar to Nikki Haley or Mike Pence or someone that it's basically good for fundraising and advantageous to be running, then, you know, because there's a time period before that would even be a question. I guess she'll be old enough in the 2028 election. Mm-hmm. But I don't think she wants to be president. Who wants to be president? I don't know. Again, she's somebody who I think is like entertaining, and like if you're getting mad at her, you're playing into what she's about. Sort of like Trump.
There's so many.
I can't do it.
There's so many representatives, and they're all basically like there are two types. There are the boring ones and the embarrassing ones. So you're either boring or you're embarrassing. And then, and you can't.
It's like SNL, the people in the background of the skits that you don't really know anything about. Mm-hmm. And then in Congress, it's like there's 435 of them. But you've got Lauren Boebert and Marge Green and Matt Gaetz and AOC and Ilhan Omar. You have the ones that are like, they're good for cable TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, AOC got a lot more ammo out of the Lauren Boebert stuff. That was good. That was really good for her TikTok.
That was like a hilarious storyline.
Yeah.
Wish we'd done an episode that week and covered it, but.
But you know, it's gone.
It's gone. The moment has passed.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know, Russia, if you're listening, how much do you really know about what's going on and how much we use you? They should start charging us like licensing fees to use them.
Get like a cease and desist because you didn't pay to mention Russia in your fundraising email. Well, you know, so it'll be interesting to see as time unfolds, going back to things we talked about today, if the actor strike ends soon and there starts being new TV and movies. But in the meantime, the morning show, totally worth a watch. I gave you the disclaimers that it's woke coded and it's got 100 subplots, but I have enjoyed it and we'll keep watching it, so check it out. And yeah.
Great. Good to be back. Good to be back from our mini being away.
I know, our mini vacation.
Yeah.
We'll probably have another because extension taxes are coming due, but hopefully we'll stay on schedule.
Yeah, literally anytime well, except for the 2-year stuff, although we were busy, but you know, sometimes life happens. Zach is busy helping people with their futures, and I am a person. So that's our roles in society.
Such a person.
Of all the people that exist, I am definitely one of them. All right. Well, we will talk to you all soon. Thanks for listening.